It's showtime, folks. Welcome in, Chase and Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, the game here on this Thursday. Hope you're having a great start to your day. It's cold. It's still snowy in certain parts of our area. So be careful out there if you are out and about. But we're here to entertain you for the next couple hours. He's Big Joe. I'm Chase McCabe. Dr. Crane, Nick Frazier on the ones and twos. What's up, JoJo?
Just another day, buddy. People are, again, the word from the on the news is treacherous, dangerous, all that. So it's really cold. If you don't have to be out, don't be out. It's that simple,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
We're done.
Yep. Just sit by your radio by the fire and listen to us. People still do that, right?
They do. I know my great-grandpa still does. He's been dead 60 years.
So we got a great show planned for you today. Greg Wyshynski, we'll check in with him at 10 o'clock today. Obviously we got the Four Nations Faceoff Final coming up tonight. So looking forward to that conversation with him at 10. Chris Sarandon, the actor, the voice actor, will join us at 10:30. He's at the Nashville Comic Con. So looking forward to him. Very funny and a lot of the voice of Jack Skellington in The Nightmare Before Christmas. So. Did a bunch of other movies as well, so we'll talk to him. But it leads us in first to our question of the day. With the Four Nations Face-Off Tournament tonight, 4.5 million people have watched U.S.-Canada the first time around. Now you got the rematch. The ratings for the Four Nations Face-Off have been very good. People have been tuning in, and you have to assume that it's not just hockey fans that have been tuning in. Mm-hmm. Well, then you got record low ratings for the NBA.
Awful.
Nobody cared about the All-Star game.
Nobody.
I mean, if you did, you probably flipped away because it kind of appeared the players didn't care about the All-Star game.
Right.
Either. And so our question is, you know, why are people not watching the NBA? And if you do watch the NBA, why? Why are you watching the NBA?
Yeah, like, I'm curious. Why are – I grew up watching all these games, and now I don't care. I don't think it's a relatability factor. I just don't think, and it's not a black or white thing, so stop that.
Yeah.
It's just that there's nobody that appeals to me. We're in the 80s and 90s.
Yeah.
I mean, I loved Dominique Wilkins. I watched the Hawks games. I had no relationship with Dominique Wilkins. I just loved watching that guy. Now I don't care. And I want to know why people aren't watching, because you did watch. So why are you not watching anymore? I don't understand. And I want to understand. That's the whole thing.
Yeah, I do too. And so that's our question. 615-737-1025, our phone and text line driven by WilsonCountyHoundie.com. Because it's funny, ever since I've been in this business, like, it's never – the only time we've ever really talked about the NBA ad nauseum is if the Grizzlies were good.
Yeah.
And, you know, they've had a couple of runs. Like, when I first started – that was the grit and grind, you know, mm-hmm. with Zeebo was there still. And
we had the mayor on.
Yeah, right.
From Memphis talking
we had
about
the,
coming over.
Was it Lionel Hollins, the coach? I mean, didn't he?
Might have been, yeah.
I think he came on. I mean, you know, but that was when the Grizz were really hot. And, you know, but the NBA was, I think, you know, LeBron was in his heyday. It was before the Warriors dynasty kind of started and all that stuff. But – and it was before, I mean, I think you lost people with this whole load management thing, and it kind of became very clear that not all, but some of the players just didn't care.
There is a lot of blame I was reading on Steph Curry for the game now being 25 feet and out.
Yeah. Right. The big man doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah. I'm like, I love watching Curry because he's just probably might be the best shooter ever in the National Basketball Association. But other than that, like, I guess what got to me is when the trade from the guy from Dallas to the Lakers.
Luka.
Yeah. And I'm thinking, why is this? I couldn't understand it because I don't watch the NBA anymore. But seeing the reaction from not a lot of people, but a few people just. And Dallas people lost their mind. I'm like, all right, what am I missing here? Why have I not seen this? And so it's a thing where I haven't watched a game in forever. And I'm a guy who grew up watching basketball in the 80s and 90s constantly. And it's something else too. Like, I love Pat Ewing, right? I watched Pat Ewing for 4 years at Georgetown. 4 years at Georgetown.
Sure.
Akeem Olajuwon at Houston. I know these are all big men, but Chris Mullin at St. John. So you kind of fell in love with these guys. Then you follow them in the NBA. Now you got a guy like the guy that was from Bellbuckle that played at Tennessee for 1 year, that was drafted by the Knicks and went to the Kings. I don't remember that guy's name. That was like 5 years ago. He's gone. And who's the guard, Kennedy something from Memphis, who was drafted by the Grizzlies, played 1 year Tennessee? He's gone. So you grow up, you know, like Dyron Nix at Tennessee. I love that player. Didn't make it in the NBA, but I watched. He was great. Followed him all 4 years at Tennessee. So you kind of get that love for those guys in college, and now it's one and done and boom, and some guys don't even go to college. They go to the G League for a year, then get there. There's a lot of reasons for me why I don't watch anymore.
Yeah.
There's no relationship with these guys.
I love the game of basketball. Like, I've been hooked to college basketball this year. I mean, I've been to several Vandy games, which – you know, I can honestly say it'd been the first time in a while.
It was fun. That was a fun game.
It was a fun game. I mean, I was watching them last night at Kentucky, but something with the NBA, there's just no relatability anymore. I think that's what it is. Now, you know what's funny is, like, then I see interviews, like they showed this piece of talking about the Olympics, right, from this past year. And there's this interview with Kevin Durant where he gets really emotional about playing for Team USA and, like, them going and winning gold and how important that was to him. And, like, the group of LeBron and, you know, those guys, that was probably their last Olympics. And it's like, okay, well, I see that and I can tell how much you love the game. And you know, he got emotional and said that the game changed his life and, like, it saved him and all that stuff. And like, I believe all that, but – you know, why aren't more people relating to that, I guess, is my thing.
Right. I don't.
Because the numbers tell me that they're not.
Well, I'm good. NBC, he feels good about it, but I don't. Yeah. I mean, I don't. You know, yeah, NBC got the contract coming up, and I just don't. There's no rhyme or why I click. I don't stop. I just scroll past it.
Kennedy Chandler, that's who you were talking about. Thank you, Ricky.
Yes, Kennedy Chandler. That's it.
By the way, I mean, I know you had a forgettable interview with Kevin Durant one time.
It was awful. He was promoting Thunder or something.
Yeah.
About this.
That was like the early days of the game.
Kid living his dream, and we had Durant on and
woke him up.
Pogue's like, "Do you know what city you're talking to?" And he's like, "Man, I got no idea." It was fun. But again, there were guys, you know, like where's the Rodman of today? Who really cared? Dennis Rodman might be eccentric, but he truly cared about winning basketball games. Truly cared about winning.
Some might argue with you on that. I agree, but some might argue with you on that because, you know, it's well documented in The Last Dance of how he had to take a break and he went out to Vegas and did wrestling.
Because he was already a champion.
Yeah, and Jordan had to go get him.
He'd already gotten his championship. So,
yeah.
But before that, when he was with the Pistons?
Oh, yeah.
With the Spurs?
Yep.
I mean, that's the Dennis Rodman I'm looking at right now. Once you get the success, you're not the same. That's what made Tom Brady so amazing.
Right.
Because he could arrest it after three Super Bowls. And like a Peyton Manning. I mean, it's about winning a Super Bowl. Now too often it's about, hey, I'm going to get a paycheck and I'm going to Miami Beach. That's the thing. And I think that kind of turns a lot of people off.
Was Will Perdue part of the Rodman trade?
Correct.
That's what I thought.
He was.
I mean, he played from 86 to 93, Detroit, then San Antonio, then Chicago, then 1 year with the Lakers, 1 year with the Mavericks before going and doing other things. But
Money grabs,
long career.
And so Purdue, when he got traded, ended up winning because the Bulls won three more in 96, 97, 98. Spurs won in 99 because he had Duncan and Robinson. I think Purdue was part of that 99 team that happened there. And then the old lockout happened. And then that threw a lot of people off. Jordan was gone. The lockout happened. And I think that's kind of when I was like, all right, I'll see you guys later.
So Rodman won two championships with the Pistons?
Yes, 89 and 90.
And then the second three-peat with the Bulls.
I'm telling you, you were just born. But and like a guy like Rexford can understand this, when Detroit played Boston in those Eastern Conference semifinals, we watched every second of those games. Because they were beating the snot out of the Celtics. Not on the scoreboard, but in the game itself.
Yeah.
We all watched that. I can't tell you who played in the last 10 Eastern Conference finals, I think Boston won a couple because we had Cornette. We know her. Mm-hmm. I think they won last year. That's the only reason I know that.
Yeah. I remember, too, so in the – I guess it was the finals in 98, I think it was. You know, it was Utah and Chicago, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Rodman had been doing the wrestling thing with WCW, and they had this kind of feud that WCW had been able to do with Karl Malone, that Karl Malone was on one side, Rodman was with the NWO with Hogan, and, like, in the game, Rodman goes and lays, like, a hard foul, like, intentional foul on Malone.
Yeah.
We had Eric Bischoff on, who was the old president of WCW, and I said, this was during COVID, and I was like, did you tell him to do that? Because, I mean, it was blatant. Like, Bob Costas was like, oh, this is some wrestling crap and, like, all this stuff. And Bischoff laughed, and he goes, I'm not going to say that I did, but I'm not going to say that I didn't either.
Play the game. Good one.
I mean, but, like, you were watching. I mean, yeah. People were watching for that. Like, it was just...
Who did Boston beat in the finals last year?
Dallas? Is that right? Was it Dallas? I don't remember.
I think you might be correct on that.
I think it was.
It was Dallas.
Yeah.
You're right. Year before.
I have no idea. Yeah, it was
it's
Dallas.
Not, I mean, it's not, you know, a degrading or a bad thing. It's just that's how little it resonates inside our brain.
That's what's crazy, that Dallas was in the finals last year, and then they trade Luka and basically blow it up this year.
And that's why I couldn't understand. I was like, why are people upset at this? I need to know. I work in sports talk. I need to know why people are upset. And I should know that immediately, and I did not know that.
615. I did not know that.
I did not know that.
615-737-1025. Why aren't you watching the NBA? Is basically our question of the day. We'll discuss that and much more throughout the show. Greg Wyshynski at 10 o'clock. Chris Sarandon, the actor, at 10:30. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. I mean, when this came out, the NBA was at maybe an all-time high. Because Jordan, you know, was Jordan.
What
Jordan
year was this, face?
93.
Okay.
I mean, I loved this movie as a kid. But, like, there's, you know, my generation still loves it. I mean, adults loved it because it was, I mean, it just showed you where the NBA was at the time. It wasn't just, like, Barkley was in it.
Right.
Patrick Ewing was in it. I mean, it was all these guys.
I know that in the 70s, the NBA finals were on tape delay. And then Bird and Magic show up. They did the 79 NCAA tournament. Magic wins. Michigan State over Indiana State. Then they get to the NBA. In 80, the first year in the NBA, Magic wins a title with the Lakers. Remember, Kareem got hurt. He plays center, does great. And then it just took off, right? We were excited because it was Magic and Bert. You know why? Because we fought. Even though Magic was at Michigan State for only 2 years, the grace and the charm and the style and the smile that he brought to basketball, we all gravitated towards that. And then you had the classic, you know, the black guy versus the white guy and all that stuff that happened. And those two guys couldn't care less about
that.
Right.
Yeah.
It was about basketball and winning. And then Bird wins in 81. The Magic wins in 82. Then the Sixers win in 83 with Dr. J. I mean, you mentioned Dr. J. I go immediately back to the dunk over the Lakers in 83. Then 84, Celtics win. 85, Lakers. And so it goes on and on and on and on. And then 89, the Bad Boys show up. They win 89 and 90. And then Jordan gets his title 91 and on. And you love that. You love the battles. You know, my guy Dominique never made it because of Jordan. I was like, damn him. I'm sick of him doing this. And then, you know, Dominique never won a title, and it went on. And so you had these just guys that you looked up to, and I followed Dominique when he was at Georgia. That's where I fell in love with him. And now it's kind of like, man, what? And I still watch sports. There's nothing that makes me want to watch, and it drives me crazy.
Chip and Mount Juliet, our phone and text line, driven by WilsonCountyHoney.com. The All-Star Games used to be fun to watch. Now the athletes don't take them seriously. Also, the way they are voted in has changed. The most deserving aren't voted in. I don't even know what the process is, but I'll take your word for it that that's, you know, kind of what it has come down to. As of late, Chris in Nashville, NBA is like baseball. I don't watch until the playoffs. NBA playoffs are still good. I mean, and I'm kind of the same way. I mean, I'll watch, but really it's the final. Like, I don't even – like, the NBA Finals, you know, I will watch, but, you know, everything else, I just, like, meh. I mean, like I said, if the Grizzlies are in it, I'll get to it, but I don't have a team that I just ride or die for.
Right. Do you think a lot could be from we think these guys don't care? Like
I think
you mentioned the All-Star games, like they don't, and I get that. The Pro Bowl is terrible before they change it. Same thing. I just still don't think guys care that they lose.
I would agree with that. And I mean, what this text said, I think really kind of makes sense. 8566. The game died with Kobe for me personally. I miss his Mamba attitude. Basketball needs another personality like him. Also, I can't stand the foul baiting style that's so prevalent now with guys like Harden. It's just boring to watch.
Great point. That's a great text.
But if you think about it, there's not that Kobe and Shaq, or even Kobe, you know, kind of saved it for a while because you went from Jordan and then Kobe took over. There was always kind of this overlap. And like LeBron did too, but it just, I feel like people didn't like LeBron like they did Jordan or Kobe or Magic or Bird or, you know, any of those guys. Like, he just – you either hated him or you didn't, or you liked him.
Right.
That's kind of what it was.
Like, I'm looking at the Eastern – Cleveland Cavaliers on top in the East, right? And so they got Darius Garland. We know him here. But – and good for him. He's making hundreds of millions of dollars. Good for you, Darius Garland. Good. But when he got hurt at Vanderbilt – then he went pro. I was excited to see him in college. I was excited to see these guys in college and see him over at Vanderbilt. And you just don't get that same relationship you get if a guy spends even 2 years. I mean, Isaiah Thomas spent 2 years at Indiana. Jordan went three. And so you don't have to be there all four. I'd like to see 2 to 3 just for that. But they're not trying to appease me. And it's just frustrating why I try to watch and I can't and I don't enjoy it anymore. And it really, really bugs me. I can't stand it.
615-737-1025. Dylan says, I'm 25 years old, and I haven't watched the NBA since my junior year of high school, which was in 2016. I personally believe that it got too political, and I feel like it's a dying sport the same way I feel like baseball is. I'm tired of seeing all these guys get paid extreme amounts of money just to be traded around like it's nothing and to watch them flop or not seem to really care about the sport. It has killed it for me. There's a lot to unpack there. I get that. I mean, there obviously have been, I don't know if it's political, but, you know, there's a lot of social, you know, things and change and, you know, speaking out, which I don't have a problem with. I mean, like, you have that platform. And so, you know, I'm okay with you expressing yourself and your beliefs. But I get it. I mean, I think for some people it was a turnoff. I mean, just like the NFL. I mean, they're, you know, but I kind of feel like that, you know, that we live in a society where a lot of people will be like, stick to sports.
Mm-hmm.
But sports have such a powerful impact on society mm-hmm. that I think sports can help provoke change. So I don't have an issue with it, but I can understand why some people would.
I totally agree with you, and that's your platform. Do whatever they want to. But this started 15 years ago. This started, like, for me in the mid-2000s, early 2000s. It happened. Let me ask you this question. This is a weird. Follow me on this one. Does the NFL have a Michael Jordan?
Patrick Mahomes? No. Oh, you mean all time?
Jordan's impact on basketball right now. Is as great or as greater as it was when he played? Agree or disagree?
Yeah. No, I agree with that.
Does the NFL have that?
No.
Have a guy who's been out of the league and, I mean, you could say, well, Brady does not have the same impact as Michael Jordan. Kids aren't wearing Tom Brady shoes. They're not wearing Peyton Manning shoes.
Right. They're not drinking Gatorade because
right.
Michael Jordan. Yeah. Like Mike. Yeah. I want to be like Mike.
Exactly. So,
play that coming back.
Does that hurt a tad? The NBA has, because they were so powerful with him, that they can't get back to that level?
Maybe. And also,
I don't know.
You make a really, really good point that I don't even know if you were trying to make this part of it. I think that, you know, you're always looking for what's next, right?
Always.
Like, okay, Brady and Manning retire. who are the faces of the NFL? I mean, Mahomes is obviously one of them, but you know, is Lamar, is Josh Allen? I mean, yeah. To me, they don't have the same kind of pull that Brady or Manning did, mm-hmm. right? Jordan, you were looking for what's next. LeBron kind of, I mean, it was Kobe for a little bit, but then LeBron, because here's this phenom out of Ohio,
right?
At 17 years old or whatever it was, goes straight into the NBA. And basically, I think people felt he was forced on everybody of like, no, he has to be the, and because the Jordan versus LeBron conversation started years ago.
Yeah. Right.
And it's like people like me were like, I don't want to hear this. Like, Jordan's the greatest of all time. There's no argument. Like, I remember the scene from a movie. I forgot what movie it was. And it was
Trainwreck.
Yeah. It might have been Trainwreck, where it's like, he has 6 championships. Well, that's not the argument. It's the only argument I need.
Right. Yeah.
That one. I mean, like, it. I mean, it's that. That's a part of it. But it's like he got forced down everybody's throat of, oh, no, he's the next one. He's better than Jordan and all this stuff. And then you had, like, people from my generation and even your generation that's like, no, I've seen the greatest of all time. And, look, LeBron is great. I'm not going to deny that.
I'm on the top all time. I'm with you on all that. But when you mention LeBron, you get eye rolls. When you mention Michael Jordan, you don't. And so that's really telling in that part as well. But there's a lot that don't like LeBron. But overall, the game – I was reading that Charlotte played Atlanta, and there might have been 1,000 people at the game. And I get it. Those are 2 franchises. But were those franchises ever get a chance to compete? The Charlotte Hornets or Bobcats, whatever they are now, I don't even know their names. Hornets. They're never going to be in the finals. I just looked up, the Grizzlies are 2nd. You think the NBA wants the Memphis Grizzlies to be in the finals? I mean, they got Ja Morant, which is great branding for him. But overall, you think people in Detroit, New York City care about that Memphis is there?
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of – I'm not saying the NBA does this or any league does this, but they want the big-time teams in there. So, I don't know. I'd love to see Memphis go all the way. Why not? That'd be great. But I'm not watching, man. Sorry.
Gene and Spring Hill might have the best text.
Okay.
NBA, who cares? Sorry, guys. But why? Tell us why. Seriously, I want to know why.
Why? That's it. Because we grew up watching these. In the 70s, 80s, and 90s, we grew up these guys. Downtown Freddie Brown, Jack Sickman with the Supersonics. We all remember those guys. I mean, it's always been around.
Thank you, Adam Vingan. It's Bad Teacher. I thought so. It wasn't
okay.
Bad Teacher.
Okay.
That's what it was. Thank you, Adam. I believe we have Chris Sarandon coming up now, so we will shift gears. We'll get back into this. 615-737-1025. It's Chase and Big Joe on a Thursday, 1025-1063 The Game. Chase and Big Joe, 1025-1063 The Game on this Thursday. We love talking about different things coming to our city, especially pop culture. Nashville Celebrity Comic-Con, March 1st through 2nd at the Nashville Fairgrounds. NashvilleCelebrityComicCon.com is where you can go to get your tickets. We'll actually be giving some tickets away here in just a few minutes, but one of the people you can see there is the fine actor Chris Sarandon, who is on the line with us. Chris, how you doing?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you?
We're doing fantastic. Thanks so much for doing this today. I know you've probably done a lot of these functions before, but how fun is it for you to be able to connect with fans, especially obviously here in our city in Nashville?
Well, I'm thrilled to be coming down there. First of all, you know, I grew up in West Virginia, so my musical tastes range, you know, they're very wide, but country music's one of my bedrocks. I was in a rock and roll band when I was a kid. We played on the same program with Lester Flatt, Earl Scruggs, and the Foggy Mountain Boys.
Ooh.
I mean, I'm in the right place at the right time.
Oh, you know, no doubt you are. That is no pun intended, music to our ears. That is very, very cool. I know, I had to. I want to start with one of my all-time favorite movies that you were actually a voice in that I don't know if you thought it would become the cult classic that it became, but The Nightmare Before Christmas, Jack Skellington, like it's still, you know, to this day, one of my all-time favorites. When you did that, did you think like, hey, this is going to be a hit and turn into what it was?
You know, I don't think anybody, when they're in the middle of working on a project, thinks, oh, this is going to be the greatest thing, you know, since sliced bread, or that this is going to be a bomb. I mean, you can usually tell if it's going to be a bomb. But in this case, it was very clear that the artistry involved, the first of all, the conception of the characters and then the realization of them by the animators, and the work that was done to create the movie, and then the finished product, which is just dazzling to look at, and Danny Elfman's music. I mean, it had the whole package. But to know that it was going to catch the public's imagination and become, I mean, in a way, Nightmare Before Christmas has become Halloween.
Oh, yeah.
You see people putting up villages around the theme of Nightmare Before Christmas. Jack Skellington in their front yard, Oogie Boogie, etc. So, no is the answer. I never thought it would have this kind of a major sort of cultural effect all over the country, all over the world, for that matter.
We're talking to Chris Sarandon. He's coming to town for the National Celebrity Comic Con taking place next weekend here in town. When Chase told me, Chris, that you were coming on, I immediately went and watched Dog Day Afternoon again. Chris, I mean, come on. I mean, you're part of one of the greatest movies of all time. And I always like asking this actors this. Did you have any idea when you're shooting that movie how classic it would become?
Actually, with that one, I did, because it was a wonderful kind of cross of a kind of interesting subject. It was a real event.
Right.
This thing really happened. And also the combination of the talents involved. It was a great screenplay. The great Sidney Lumet directed it. He directed Serpico, any number of other great movies, Network. Sidney's participation, and also Pacino, John Cazale, Charlie Durning, the guy who plays the cop who is involved with the negotiations. I just had a feeling about this one. Yeah, I'll say yes. I thought this was going to be a great movie, and as it turned out, I think it got like 8 Academy Award nominations. Great screenplay, by the way, too. So, yeah. I think we all knew that we were working on something very special.
I tell kids who have born in the 2000s, go watch that movie because it is true cinema. All right, Chris, let me ask you about this other movie. Because when it came out, I don't think a lot of us saw it, but when it hit cable, you know where I'm going with this, Child's Play has become a massively huge movie for a lot of us. That movie, again, theatrical release, it was okay. Hits cable, takes off. I just wonder how many people, when they go to these comic cons, come to see you because of that movie. Mm-hmm.
A good number of people. I mean, certainly, the preponderant numbers are more for Nightmare and also for The Princess Bride.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a very popular movie as well and has become a kind of cross-cultural thing. But Child's Play, it comes and goes. It also depends on the kind of Comic-Con it is. If it's a horror genre Comic-Con, then yes, I get a lot of people for Child's Play. And obviously Nightmare and a movie called Fright Night as well.
Yes.
Chris Sarandon is with us on the Chase and Big Joe Show. Nashville Celebrity Comic-Con coming to our city March 1st through the 2nd at the Nashville Fairgrounds. Is there a movie or a TV show that somebody will come up to you and say, hey, I loved you in this, that you kind of take a step back and go, wait, really? That one?
Yes, in fact. Yeah, I did a movie a long time ago called The Sentinel. Which was based on a very popular horror novel about a priest who lives in a brownstone in Brooklyn or someplace, and it's the gate to hell. Now, the reason that I did this movie was, at the time, I had stars in my eyes. I was, I got star billing. I was making a fair amount of money, and I thought, oh yeah, I'll do this. And it was not a pleasant experience. But that's really the outlier in my career. I mean, I have to say, looking back on everything I've done, I can't think of anything else that I regret doing, literally. And I regret that one, but everything else, I'm a lucky guy.
How much did you enjoy doing the guest star spots on TV shows? Like, whether it was ER or Orange is the New Black, I'm a Star Trek fan, you did Deep Space Nine. I mean, how fun was that to be able to do those guest spots?
Almost always it is great to do them because the cast of the shows, you know, who are in that kind of machine of doing 23 or 24 at the time, you know, it doesn't happen anymore, but 23 or 24 episodes at a time over a year, you know, they get worn out after a time. But they, generally speaking, are very helpful and welcoming to the guest stars who come on. And I've always had a great experience. I had a great experience with the ER cast, with the Law and Order cast. I did a string of shows with a show called The Practice. They were wonderful. There was a show called Judging Amy that I did an arc on, and that was a lovely experience. So, you know, actors, we take care of each other because we've all been through it. You know, we've all been through the same kind of, you know, coming on to a set and you don't know anybody. It's like the first day in school, in a way. but in this case, your classmates are friendly. They don't bully you. They don't give you a hard time.
We're talking to Chris Sarandon, the great actor here on the Chasing Big Joe show. All right, so now my friends are texting me, and they're all Princess Bride questions. I had to get my Fright Night question out and my Child's Play because I love those movies. Chris, why do you think Princess Bride still resonates so popular, my Lord, 38 years later?
Well, first of all, great script. The great William Goldman, who wrote Marathon Man and Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, this was his favorite screenplay of all time that he wrote in his life, and he was an Oscar winner. And it came from a very personal place with him. He walked into his daughter. He has two daughters. Had two daughters. He's passed away. And he walked into their room one day and said, "I want to write a movie for you girls. What do you want it to be about?" And one of them said, "Princess." And the other one said, "A bride." So he sat down and he wrote this movie, but it turned out to be very personal for him. First of all, because it was for his kids, and secondly, because the story itself is it's a story about love. But also it has his combination of romanticism and cynicism. If you know what I mean, that you know, the most perfect kiss in the world at the end of the movie, but at the same time, there's a line that goes, "Life isn't fair. Anybody who tells you that is selling something."
Oh,
and in between, there's great fun. There are great lines. Some of my favorite lines that I've ever uttered on screen have been in that movie. Quotable. And you get involved in the plot, despite the fact that it's hard to describe. It's not that we make fun of the genre of the great adventure romantic movies, you know, of the past, the Errol Flynn movies and those, but at the same time we're having fun with it. And so everything is taken by the characters in the movie very seriously. But the audience sits there and goes, "Oh man, this is I'm having such a great time. This is so great. I remember this and I remember that." I get quoted lines from the movie all the time, constantly.
Oh, I'm sure you do. And I was going to say, hopefully I can meet you next weekend. The one line I'm going to tell you is, "You're so cool, Brewster." Because I think, I'm telling you, Chris, we all watched that movie. We said that line for the next 6 months after that. And
it's just
a pop culture thing. Why you are so revered and so beloved today, because, hell, I think I know more about you than I did my own father, because I watched all these movies with you, right? I mean, it was so good. It was so fun and so innocent.
And when you grow up with something, it makes a difference. You know, I do a podcast called Cooking by Heart because I grew up in a restaurant. So I talk to people about growing up with food, and those memories are indelible. The stuff that we experience when we're kids and when we're, you know, when we start in elementary school and we start watching movies and then we go, you know, we get more sophisticated and we start watching stuff that's a little more gnarly and interesting. It stays with us through our entire lives.
Well, Chris, this has been a lot of fun. Thanks so much for doing this. We're looking forward to having you in Nashville at the fairgrounds March 1st through the 2nd for Celebrity Comic Con. But thanks so much for doing this. This is awesome.
Oh, my pleasure, guys, and I hope we get a chance to meet.
Yes.
You guys take care.
Absolutely.
And hello to everybody in Nashville.
Awesome. Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it.
All right, bud. Bye-bye.
Chris Sarandon, the fine actor, will be at Nashville Celebrity Comic-Con March 1st through the 2nd at the Nashville Fairgrounds. You can go to NashvilleCelebrityComicCon.com to get your tickets. But you know what, JoJo? We're going to give some tickets away right now.
Oh!
You got a four-pack of tickets to Nashville Celebrity Comic Con at the fairgrounds Saturday, March 1st, Sunday, March 2nd. Chevy Chase will be there. Randy Quaid will be there. Billy Zabka, Martin Cove, Mick Foley, Mickey James, the Honky Tonk Man from wrestling, and then, of course, Chris Sarandon that we just talked to.
Back it up. Who?
The Honky Tonk Man.
Are you serious?
Oh, yeah. He's going to be there.
Yes.
Caller number 5, 615-737-1025.
I got something for our next segment. I want to know, because we're talking about The Princess Bride, just for one segment, what's the most quotable movie of all time?
Oh.
For our next segment, what's the most quotable movie that you think, there's no right or wrong answer, of all time?
That's a great one. 615-737-1025. You can win these tickets. Caller number 5, Chase and Big Joe, 1025-1063, The Game.
You know, Lloyd, just when I think you couldn't possibly be any dumber, you go and do something like this and totally redeem yourself.
Still want to go to Aspen?
Oh, yeah. Okay, let's go, buddy.
Yes. Chase and Big Joe, 1025-1063, The Game. Thanks to Chris Sarandon for coming on with us, Nashville Celebrity Comic Con, which has sparked a question. We'll get back to our NBA question, don't worry. But most quotable movies, obviously Dumb and Dumber is up there.
What's your number one? Off the top of your head.
I mean, it might be that one. Because how many times do you say, so you're telling me there's a chance?
Twice a day, probably, yeah, for the last 30 years.
So David Janes texted me, and I was going to say one of these, Step Brothers.
It's a great one.
Step Brothers is one. He also says Superbad. Superbad has some good ones. One that I quote quite a bit is The Other Guys.
That's a good
Will
one.
Will Ferrell. Yeah. And,
that's a really good one.
Which one? That's
Mark Wahlberg.
Mark Wahlberg.
Yes.
Yeah.
Those are good. I go Fletch.
Gator wants his gat back.
I mean, there's so many of them.
You ever done a desk pop?
Yeah, right? I like Fletch. For me, that was one that we still today. Stripes.
Yep.
I mean, I just strike. I'm like, Lee Harvey, you are a madman. When your friend stole that I mean, that's.
Office Space.
Not so much for me.
But it has some good. Like, in just a moment.
Case of the Mondays.
Case of the Mondays. Where's my stapler? Don't touch my Milton. Stapler.
Yep. Yeah, but there's a few, but when you quote from beginning to end, those are the ones like Caddyshack.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Caddyshack, I cannot tell you how many, when you're golfing, how many Caddyshacks you drop out there. Stripes, Caddyshack, Fletch are ones for me that you still resonate for today. Step Brothers enter that echelon. Once it, nobody saw in the theater. Nobody did. Once it hits cable and TNT, whatever,
yep,
it took off, and you can't get enough of it. So Step Brothers is in that upper echelon.
Matt from Camden, I'm surprised neither one of us have said this one. Anchorman.
Anchorman's really good.
I mean, especially that, that really escalated quickly.
That's,
I mean, that really got out of hand.
Brick killed a man. I mean,
yeah, I've been meaning
are...
to talk to you about that. You might want to lay low for a few days.
Dana says Forrest Gump, Wizard of Oz, and The Godfather.
Yeah, those are up there. I would say those are up there.
I mean, Forrest Gump, to me, it's one up there, and there's certain lines in there that just rip you right in the heart.
Oh, yeah. Such a great movie. like, the ones that I – like, Anchorman, a lot of that was just ad-lib, right?
It was, yep.
I mean, and that – like, those are the best.
Well, he wrote it with a guy named Adam McKay, who also wrote Ricky Bobby, Step Brothers.
Yeah.
And then Anchorman 2. Dr. Crane and I have talked about
underrated.
Yes. And the dinner scene with the family, I'm telling you, if you've never seen that Anchorman 2, you need to watch, because how they kept – they had to spend weeks filming that, right, Dr.
What?
Crane?
I'll tell you another one that's very quotable.
Yes.
Major League.
Oh, yeah.
One of my
all-time
favorites that just does not – because there's other parts that get quoted in that movie, but I think one of the funniest things is they call Lou Brown how would you like to manage the Indians? I'll have to get back to you. I got somebody on the other line for some white walls. It's so, so funny, but you got, you know, the part where Charlie Sheen thinks that Roger Dorn's going to knock him out for sleeping with his wife, and he's like, strike this bleeper out. And then he punches him after he does it.
Like, Dorn in spring training. This is not in my contract. I'm not supposed to do push-ups. He just unzips his shorts and says, well.
Here's what I think of your contract.
Oh, Dr. Craig.
That was a great catch. Don't ever do it again.
Can you do your Anchorman? Can you do your
What?
Let's see. Let me read some of these real quick. Memorable movie lines. I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse. The Godfather, I feel the need for speed. Top Gun, that's from Roger. Anchorman gets another vote. Dodgeball, I'm a band director and I quote it all the time. The kids have no idea it's from a movie. Yeah, that's a good one. Dazed and Confused.
Good one.
Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Oh, yeah.
Fletch, Caddyshack, Christmas Vacation. Look, Russ, no lines. Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Good one.
That's a good one. Every year around Christmas, like, if people are walking by, I'll be like, Merry Christmas, Merry Christmas. Kiss my ass. Kiss his ass.
Oh, my gosh.
Step Brothers, B-Man, was that a fart? I don't know. Is that onions and ketchup? I can taste it on my tongue.
Just Step Brothers, yes.
Yeah.
Is it Pan or Pam?
Pam.
You sure? It's not Pan? Pan?
For what?
Step Brothers.
Oh, Pan. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
Just, how do you keep a straight face through that?
Why are you sweating? I was watching Cops. Cops didn't come on till 4 o'clock. Did you touch my drum set?
Oh, man.
Fletch, a good one. Mike in Nashville. This, I agree with this, too. Friday.
Friday's a good one. That's a really
good one.
By Felicia,
but there's other ones in that one. How are you going to get fired on your day off? A Few Good Men and Jerry Maguire. Those are good ones.
Yep.
Robert says, I'm a peacock. You got to let me fly. Napoleon Dynamite, Caddyshack. Can I try that really quick? It's in the hole.
But I think the one you said earlier is the one, might be the most quotable one of all the movies, is you saying there's a chance. Because that's done everywhere.
So you're telling me there's a chance.
I mean, in that movie, did you see that movie in the theater? Y'all weren't even born yet.
It was on VCR for me every single day.
I'm going to be honest with you. I think I was way, way, way too young, but I'm pretty sure I saw it in the theater. I don't remember who took me.
6 years old. Probably your awesome dad did.
It probably was him. And probably got in trouble for it.
Can I ask you a question here? What's the hardest you've laughed in a theater? What's the hardest you've laughed?
That's a really good question. It might have been Anchorman. Yeah, maybe.
Dr. Crane?
To be honest with you, every time I go to the theaters, I fall asleep.
Okay.
I literally cannot keep my eyes open while I sit in that chair.
I get it. For me, Something About Mary. And you all know the part. When they go to dinner and her hair's sticking up.
Oh, yeah.
The entire they should have gone to black for like 5 minutes just to have an intermission. The entire theater wouldn't stop laughing. I mean, it was – I'll never forget that moment. People just lost their mind. They were crying in the theater. To me, that's the funniest moment ever in a movie theater. Ever.
I don't know if I should read this on the air. Steven from Hendersonville, great movie line from Congo. You know what I'm talking about?
I do not.
About a banana?
I do not. During the break, you can tell
us. I'll tell you during the break. Super Troopers, that's a good one. We'll ask Greg Wyshynski. I'm sure he has a good answer. Obviously, the Four Nations face-off concludes tonight. Canada versus the U.S. for the championship. We'll talk to Greg coming up next. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.